Fuck, it's Friday!
It's all about the pandemics, baby.
Hello there and welcome to the tech podcast nobody asked for, but everybody loves. It's called Two and a Half Bens. And I'm Phoneboy.
And I'm Phoenix.
And I'm Sir Primrose.
There we go. All right. Well,
now that you know who we are.
Yeah, So you were talking before we hit the record button. You were talking about the joys of delivering Amazon packages and occasionally having issues, you know, with traction.
Doing his own stunts, if you will.
Exactly.
I took some damage while I was at work yesterday, and the result was much blood was spilled, and now I have a big ass bandage on my leg.
Yes.
I don't know why I put an ass bandage on my leg, but, you know, there it is.
Well, there you go. It was ass branded. You know, I mean, I'm sorry.
God damn it. I just got auto corrupted trying to get ass bandage.
Ass bandage, yes.
Because I'm wondering, is it an actual bandage for your ass, or is it just one of those horrible band-aid? Like, this is ass.
Well,
I feel like this is a discussion that doesn't need to be had.
No, you're probably correct about that. So, this is a tech show, is it not? We heard rumors
involves tech.
Maybe we should talk tech. Right. I'm curious what you have this.
I have no AI stories.
Oh, you have no AI stories.
I
have a couple AI stories, but I have far less AI stories than usual. So what do you have?
I have no AI stories.
Okay. Well, do you have any other stories?
Oh, I don't know. I just had one open. So this one is titled How TechSpot Missed the Point on ClickFix.
Okay, so can you educate us on what this is? Because I'm kind of listening to that.
Are you familiar with the phrase ClickFix?
No, I'm not. That's actually why I'm kind of like...
I just learned it. Yeah. So here is basically how the vulnerability... And let me know with an audible sound exactly when you slap your head.
Okay.
So the vulnerability is, and TechSpot flourishes with the holiday travel season approaching a period that typically brings a surge in. Okay, whatever.
They're running their browser with JavaScript enabled.
you visit a website. The website puts up some thing that you're supposed to trust. The example given, which I think is a pretty good example, is an I'm not a robot, some kind of CAPTCHA. And apparently the CAPTCHA contains instructions on the screen that says, in order to verify that you're not a robot, please copy this line of text and put it into a command window.
Oh, dear God.
Nothing bad can come out of
that. That was the sound.
No.
Let's trust random people on the internet. I mean, that's why Stack Overflow exists, right?
So this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 9 paragraphs in this article. I just gave you everything that you need to know to slap your head and go, nope.
That's called social engineering, folks.
Yes. And that, they actually did identify that it's a social engineering, but the title in the page that I just dropped says, hackers found a way to weaponize CAPTCHA pages and it's incredibly effective. Yeah. It's effective against morons. That's how social engineering works. So then it goes on, the bulk of the article here, and yes, I'm bringing this not because I particularly feel like that this is a vulnerability that everybody must be afraid of. As a matter of fact, if there's a technical angle to this, it's don't enter somebody else's commands into your command prompt. No, I'm bringing this for the purpose of pointing fun at TechSpot for making a big to-do. Like, this is a giant Chicken Little story. Scary. The moment that you type somebody else's commands in, it's not your computer anymore, because that can literally do anything. And they spend a lot of effort pointing out that the very reasonable position that, well, if you type it in a command prompt, it's not seen as coming from the website. It's seen as coming from the user, and therefore it bypasses signature checks and a lot of the endpoint security and basically most of the security on there, unless your machine is locked down to, you know, there's some endpoint security that actually will lock down the machine saying, nope, I'm sorry, I know you're the user, but you're a moron, and therefore we won't let you do that. And that's the only thing that works against somebody who falls for this, because you have to be really fucking stupid in order to take somebody else's text and paste it into a command prompt without analyzing it.
But we know end users fall into that category more and more.
Which is why it's a public service that TechSpot is taking this super obvious thing and making a whole article out of it. So, you know, go on. PSA, don't fuck up your computer by thinking you know what you're doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, then you certainly, if you're going to copy paste a command line, you should have some idea of what it's going to do.
Yeah.
Maybe even validate the commands or whatever. But see, the problem is that
I don't even copy and paste the curl commands from GitHub when they're like, to install, do that. Like, okay, I know what this is probably doing, but I'm opening that install script and reading it first.
Well, yes, because you never know what that script is going to do, right? Especially if it has sudo associated with it.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because
anything that says
how many times I've seen that, yeah, and I go,
anything that says enter your administrator password, just, you know what, back up and think, do I really need this bullshit?
That's funny that he mentioned that, because in some of the stuff that I was doing for my A+ hardware this week, there was a thing that involved having to give permissions. It was app-wise, permissions for administrative, and I'm just like, nope.
Yeah,
that sounds like a lot of nope.
That's when you back up and be like, college, do I really want to do this shit?
No. No. I don't mean they were asking me to enter my admin, because that would have been a suck my dick moment. No, they were literally giving an example of an app being like, oh, yeah, you should just, you know, give
trust
the permissions.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
not as far as I can see you. Thank you.
Well, if you get to that point, you've already ignored Bemrose's advice about apps.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Don't. Yeah, don't is the basic message there.
Just friends don't let friends install apps.
You need to compile them from a source.
This is your brain. This is your brain on installing apps. Any questions?
Exactly. I mean, seriously. I mean, there we go. Friends don't let friends install apps. Yeah, that's especially on smartphones. Of course, probably at this point, friends don't let friends use smartphones. That's probably another.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, you can tell how outdated that saying is, though, by the fact that inherent in just the idea of friends don't, it is that people have friends.
You mean offline?
Yeah, I guess so.
You must be old. That's a theory very outdated.
I know this isn't necessarily related to anything else we've been talking about, but I have to get it off my chest. Facebook friends are not friends.
Thank you.
They're dopamine clicks.
Okay. I literally, when having this mirror conversation with my riders, are prone to asking, you've got all these friends on Facebook. How many can you call at 3 a.m. and say, girl, I'm hammered. I need somebody to bail me out. Or moreover, the bitch is sitting next to you going, phew, that might not have been a good idea, but it's a great time.
Yeah, you need the ones whose relationship status is, we'll help you hide a body.
Precisely, and that only comes with face-to-face contact, usually.
Yeah, that's a bit much. I agree with, yeah, if you want to have a friend, yeah, that's ultimately hide a body and hopefully have a place to actually do so.
And so, you know, in order to make friends, making friends and making bodies is, they go hand in hand.
Exactly. You know, that's a different show. That's the funny thing about murder, which, yeah.
I know, we're not bleeding into that.
So
what, you cut into this show on your other tomorrow show all the time.
Well, that's because we kind of run this shit.
Yeah, we kind of, we haven't done a funny thing about murder in a while. Chris, we've been kind of busy.
Yeah,
get off, and that's my tits.
That's why this show exists, to cut into ATN, because they haven't done an ATN in a while. But But we do this show, which is why you shouldn't be cutting into it from Lotus Effect. You see where I'm going with this?
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. That's all I know.
Well, then introduce another topic.
Yes. Okay. I'll go with this. I think this is called tech inventing shit, right? Orthosomnia might be ruining your sleep, and here's what you should know. From Aura rings to mobile apps to smart mattress pads, sleep tracking technology is abundant nowadays, and these tools promise to help us improve our rest by sharing insights into how much we sleep, how well, and even when we should go to bed and wake up. But this tech-driven pursuit of better sleep isn't always so helpful. In fact, some people, it might even be counterproductive to that ultimate goal, giving rise to the condition that experts have dubbed orthosomnia. Orthosomnia is a condition characterized by poor sleep that stems from an obsessive pursuit of optimal sleep. There you go. You know, we talk about all this technology and how it enables us, right, to potentially do this. And I'll be honest, one of the reasons I bought an Apple Watch way back in the day was, I've always had trouble sleeping, and I'm trying to just kind of, I'm more just kind of tracking like how much I'm sleeping rather than like the quality of it. Because the reality is, you know how much, you know the quality of your sleep, because you wake up and you go, do I feel good this morning? No. Okay. Well, maybe I didn't sleep so well. Or how many times did I wake up and go take a piss last night? Yeah. Okay. That might have an effect, right? So, you know, but yeah, do I use it to track just how much? Yeah. Am I obsessed about it? No, not necessarily, but it is something that I pay attention to. But I could see, like, for people that have these addictive personalities, right, the all of these, you know, the Uber tracking of everything, and I've been one of those people, so I can, you know, as somebody who used to, you know, track how many miles they ran and that kind of thing, like, yeah, you can easily get obsessed.
I remember lots and lots of pictures of your nipples.
Yes, the nipple pics. Yes, we know about the nipple pics, but I just it's like, there, you know, the tech, you know, where's Professor Ted?
You know? I don't know. Clearly, I'm a Luddite, because the technology that I use to determine when I should go to bed is I'm tired. And crazy, the technology I use to determine when I should get up is I'm awake.
Or an alarm clock, maybe. But that's a whole...
No, actually, I don't even do that. I just go to bed at the same time every day, and I get up at the same time every day, and I don't need a damn alarm clock. It turns out that if you just get into a rhythm, you know what? I don't set an alarm, and I wake up at 8 o'clock every morning. Done.
Well, there you go. Whatever works for you, man. I mean, that's the thing, is that you don't need all that.
But yeah. Even if you do need an alarm clock,
I had an alarm clock from 1976. Yeah. The only reason I still don't have that alarm clock is because it stopped working.
Yeah, the alarm clock you need needs an analog face, and you twist a dial on the back to wind it up, and it has two giant bells on top of it with a hammer that bangs between them.
Okay, JCD.
That is the alarm. Hey, you know what? I'm also the only human other than JCD who doesn't sleep next to a phone, which I will tell you, when assholes call at 7 a.m. going, can you come into work, and my phone is ringing on a different floor, is kind of nice.
Clearly,
as it should be. Yes, but yeah, either way, right, this is, yeah, it's like tech creates issues. I mean, we know this, right? This is, yeah, it's like it, yeah, it's, it creates, I'm sure we could come up with all kinds of other sickness, but there, I swear to God, I don't know if y'all have noticed this, kind of looking through some of these stories, it's like, it's almost like they're inventing shit to write about it anymore, because it's all just kind of, well, you just kind of look at it and you go, yes, what the fuck,
they're fucking bored.
Yes. You know, I'm old enough to remember when the news was just from like 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. and then maybe again at 11.
Yeah, exactly. You had your local news and your national news.
What was it around the 1991 Gulf War or so that suddenly a couple people went, we could make money if we just bombard people with news 24/7.
And when that happens, CNN.
Now you got to figure out, okay, what do we bombard them with? Oh, okay, let's manufacture some crap information.
And the same thing with websites. Everybody had to have a fucking website. So what do? They put, you know, it's just,
hey, there were some quality fucking websites out there.
There were some quality fucking websites, I can assure you. I ran one that people liked for a while, but that anyway.
You ran a fucking website?
No, that would be the
It
only
was the early thing. Old. Oh, yeah, it was. God damn it. Me in the tongue.
Was it Lemon
it was
Party?
The earliest version of OnlyFans.
My goodness. But But I mean, it's the proliferation of shit.
It's the dame just walked by and just didn't even slow down and just walked by, gave me a thumbs up and said, blue waffle.
God damn it.
Sorry.
Wrong show, Dame Bemrose.
Wait, you know, technically not sorry.
Never sorry.
No. Okay, so there is, and somebody may have coined a rule of the internet out of this or something, but I don't know. There is some kind of truism that I think I need to think on about, for every problem that technology solves, it creates a new one that we don't realize is going to be a problem.
Well, it creates 33 others.
Yeah, it could be several years before we realize that it's going to be a problem. But I guess what we're all saying is Uncle Ted was right. Not Uncle Ted?
No, Professor Ted.
Professor Ted.
Uncle Ted is a musician.
Uncle Ted's Nugent, man.
Ted Nugent is often right, too. So.
Yes, but definitely.
Except his political views of late have become fucked.
We know Professor Ted was right, so. I think that's probably one of our mottos here. Professor Ted was right.
Among the other things.
The more people than are ever willing to admit have some kind of social internet enabled dopamine disease. Over socialization is the word that Professor Ted used a lot. Social media addiction, whatever. There are so many things that, it's kind of like what you say on that other show that I can't remember the name of, where you're like, just stop eating so much sugar and you will feel better because it kills the inflammation in your whole body. Well, you can kill a lot of inflammation in your brain by stop feeding it hot, fresh garbage information.
And that's something I did myself, right? Because what did I realize? So, like, during when this whole fake insurrection, January 6th thing came about, I kind of saw what was happening on the mainstream social media platforms, and I made a decision right then and there. I said, I can't watch this anymore. I need to disconnect myself. Now, I still have to do it for work occasionally, and I do occasionally post things, but I don't spend a lot of time on there. It's not like I scroll it. I don't even scroll, the Mastodon on like a daily basis necessarily.
I definitely scroll it irregularly.
Yeah.
It is the one social media platform that I am willing to let myself get hooked into.
Yeah. Cause there's no algos. It's basically, who do I want to follow?
Well, that helps. Yes.
Yeah. That's the main problem I have is that, the algos are like fucking everywhere,
And it is important. And I'm not going to say that I'm completely, I preach a lot of things that I don't necessarily practice. I'm probably a little bit hooked into social media, but like I said, that is the only social media that I'm on is the Fediverse. I would say Mastodon like you do, except that I don't run a Mastodon server. There are other types of software, but I digress.
It's OStatus or whatever the hell that the underlying protocol is.
But,
or,
Yeah. There are things that you look at and you're like, yeah, I'm acting a little addicted to this. I'm clicking this more than once a day. Maybe I should slow down. Set your own boundaries. Just make sure that you are setting boundaries is probably the important bit. The big advantage to Fediverse is, like you said, no algos though, because what it means is if there is a toxic thing coming into your feed and you recognize that, which is always the trick, then you can unsubscribe, unfollow, and now it's not in your feed anymore. You don't have an algorithm going, huh, this person gave a thumbs up to this horrible, terrible, toxic person. We're going to find more like it, and then feeding you that.
Well, yes, exactly, because it's all about engagement, right? That's what they're trying to drive with the social media platforms.
The admin to Bemrose Social is not trying to get my engagement. In fact, he keeps trying to kick me off the platform.
Yeah, exactly. Which, probably is for the best if we're honest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that guy is kind of a dick.
And I'm happy to report I have absolutely no social media presence if you don't count Massive Dong. And I barely even open up.
Yeah. You want me to blow your mind?
Be like Phoenix. Don't social
media. The Lotus Effect is a social network.
Yeah, but I don't log into it.
No, it's just what are you doing right now? We're using
This is 2.5 bends. Has nothing to do with Lotus. Yeah, it's just on their stream.
You understand that the Lotus stream and all and the chat room attached to it and the podcasts on it are your social network, and you right now at this very moment have your arm stretched and your other hand tapping the inside of your elbow.
What?
Yeah, I'm not
lost on that one.
Yes,
you're addicted. Well, maybe you're not.
Oh,
but
I get.
You're definitely feeding it.
Yeah, no, I could quit this shit at any time. I've tried. Phone boy won't let me.
Jeez. Well,
phone boy, what the fuck?
He's my dealer.
Okay. Anyway.
He is the one that connects to the stream.
We should move to another story before I become more silly.
I think it's your turn to it.
And it's funny because I have one that would have probably fit well after the one Sir Bemrose did, but that's okay because at the end of the day, we all get it done. So found this great little story that might cause some uncomfortability above the scratches on his leg because hackers are turning Cisco and Citrix 0 days into a malware nightmare. Because sophisticated threat actors have been using a maximum severity zero-day vulnerability in Cisco's Identity Service Engine, ISE, and Citrix systems to deploy custom backdoor malware. Apparently, Scamazon's threat intelligence team said it recently stumbled on an insufficient validation of user-supplied input vulnerable in Cisco's ISE deployments, achieving pre-authentication remote code execution on compromised endpoints and providing administrator level access to the systems. Yay!
So you mean one of these companies that can't seem to get these basic security issues right and yet is in every sort of government organization?
Yeah, okay. Pretty much that would be the one. Yep. They found it while they were investigating a Citrix Bleed 2 vulnerability, which also exploited a 0 day. And it actually has a CVE 2025-20337. And it's been assigned a severity score of 10 out of 10. Yeah, that's critical. You're pretty fucked. Game over.
Yeah, that means basically anonymous access. Yeah, basically anonymous root access is what that basically is.
That is basically what it is.
What could go wrong? What could go wrong?
Exactly. You know, it doesn't require any valid credentials to exploit the vulnerability. All they have to do is submit a crafted API request. How simple! And, you know, a custom web shell disguises a legitimate Cisco ISE component named Identity Audit Action. Yep. So the web shell came with advanced evasion capabilities, including operating entirely in memory, using Java Reflection to inject itself into running threads, and registering as a listener to monitor all HTTP requests across the Tomcat server. It also implemented DES encryption with non-standard Base64 encoding and a required knowledge of specific HTTP headers to access. Yay! Now, of course, Amazon didn't attribute it to any particular threat actor, and they don't think that it was targeting any specific industry or organization. Instead, it was used indiscriminately and against as many organizations as possible. So yeah, this is basically a spray and pray.
You know, I appreciate the JVM was a pioneering platform for, you know, one of the first garbage collected platforms out there, and some amazing, like, you know, one of the first ones that truly dedicated itself to cross-platform. But oh my god, is it a security nightmare if you're not actively using it for something? Lock that shit down.
That makes sense. That's why people don't do it.
Yeah, I mean that was just a small part of it, but as a programmer, it hurts when somebody's like, oh, and also they're activating Java in an app that was, you know, runs in a browser. Like, why the hell was that access allowed?
Because people are lazy, right? You know that.
Yeah, I know.
You knew that answer. I didn't have to as the,
I knew.
Earliest nerd here. No. But of course, I think it is. I think it's Rye's turn to pull something out of
all
his
right,
pack.
All right. What do I got? How about a new feature from Microsoft Teams? They are adding a feature that will allow the organizer of a meeting to block screen captures. from Teams.
Why? Now,
why is because the organizers will, because DRM is the reason why, because the amount of computing cycles that have been put into the tilting at windmills task, Don Quixote has not put so much effort as people in software have put into the idea of giving you the content with one hand and then trying very, very, very hard to take it back with the other hand. And that's the crux of DRM. DRM is a, the classic security parable that has Alice passing a message to Bob and doesn't want Charlie to intercept it, right? DRM means Bob and Charlie are the same fucking person. How is that supposed to work? And that's what this is. It's not DRM per se, but again, it's the idea. I came up again, showing my age, where the phrase "information wants to be free" was, it was a really cool catchphrase, but it pretty much essentially caught the idea that on all of these digital protocols where copying in memory is free and transmitting over a wire is cheap and easy, the idea that you can take something back, we knew at the very earliest beginning of network computing that, hey, look, I'm sending a copy to somebody else. It is outside my sphere of control. Therefore, I don't have the ability to restrict how they use it. I don't have the ability to take it back. I can't remotely delete it. I have a story every goddamn week of somebody going out and saying, oh, I'd like to be able to delete my social media posts. Oh, I'd like to be able to erase this thing from the internet. Oh, I'd like to be able to send somebody a presentation and then try to keep them from making a copy or from screenshotting it. By the way, that doesn't work, you idiots out there. You cannot stop somebody. If you organize a meeting and you put a bunch of slides up in Teams and put the flag on that says you cannot screenshot this, somebody is going to come up in about 2.3 seconds with the idea of pointing a phone at the other phone screen and snapping a picture that way. Suddenly, your efforts are for nothing. Microsoft, why do you keep making these features that are useless? They don't do anything.
You answered your own question with the first statement there. Microsoft.
Well, the Microsoft are the ones who are making Teams.
The quote from
the article to describe what this is actually doing, in case I haven't done a good job of that, quote, on Windows desktop devices, screenshots display a black rectangle around the meeting window. Well, on Android phones and tablets, users will see a message indicating that screen capture is restricted. On all other platforms that don't support it, meeting attendees will be joined in audio only mode.
How useful is that shit?
Hold on a second. What's the whole point of being on a Teams if it's audio only? I had to do one of those for an interview for my first internship. It was the most painful fucking thing I ever experienced. Like, what? If I'm talking to you over, like, clean feet is one thing.
I have to admit, talking to people every other Friday in audio only is painful. But we manage it anyway.
But on a serious thing, though, Sir Bemrose, if you're supposed to be meeting with someone, okay, especially for an interview, having it be audio only, unless you're holding a telephone, I know, I'm fucking old, okay? But I want to see you if I have to be on a Teams call. I don't want to just do it through audio. I want to be able to read your facial expressions. I want to be able to get to kind of have a face-to-face, even if it is over a computer screen, vibe going with the person. That's just unbelievable.
In so much as an interview is an attempt to get a feel and an understanding about the character of a person and the qualifications, you want as many cues as you can, and humans have evolved to get visual cues from the faces of other humans. We're quite good at it. And therefore, the video, yes, I think, if you're going to be conducting an interview, is a critical portion. But I guess, if the interviewer wants to be hiring somebody who's unqualified, then by all means, let AI look at the resume and just make your decision with a dartboard for all I care.
Well, that's pretty much what they're doing anyway.
It is what they do these days. But
that's pretty much what they've done all along.
This screen capture thing, you know, if I may delve into the technical bits. First of all, it is not enabled by default. That would be a massive uproar. The meeting organizer has to turn it on. And I guarantee you there will be organizers who turn this thing on and then realize how incredibly inconvenient it is. And eventually, what I predict is Microsoft will have put all the effort into this feature and no one will use it because it is such a pain in the ass. The technical bit is they are going to be using operating system supplied APIs to effectively let an app elevate its way into operating system level functions, which, by the way, is my computer has always been a multi-computing environment, at least since the days of, Windows. DOS was a single task at a time, but this is a multitasking environment. And I am very much personally against the idea that one app should be able to restrict other apps from doing anything, or especially, using shared resources like the screen. Somewhere along the line, though, in their endless pursuit of enabling DRM, the operating system vendors came out and said, hey, you know what? We'll go ahead and let the operating system step in and blank out a window because the person running this window doesn't want the user to be able to use what's on the screen or something like that. As far as I'm concerned, that is a program you should never fucking use. This right here, the whole reason I'm bringing this story at all is because it is another reason why I never, ever, ever, ever want to use Microsoft Teams, because Microsoft is drawing a line in the sand and saying, you do not own your computer. We own your computer. We will tell you what you're allowed to do with it. I don't run programs that do that.
Unfortunately, as a day job, where yes, we've embraced.
Yeah, there's always. Yeah. There's always someone, and for example, I everything that I just said goes completely out the window when I'm doing my day job and we have to run this absolutely atrocious abortion of an app. That is the only way.
No less.
The only way that you can do the deliveries that I do is you run their app and. The funny thing is, they hand us phones for work, which is good because there's no fucking way I would ever install this on my own phone, even if I could. And then they say, oh yeah. And if your phone battery dies, then, go ahead and just install on your personal phone and use it there.
How about no?
Now it turns out that, my phone battery tends not to die because I'm competent at not running 17 apps at once, things like that. But yeah, I just, there is a philosophy thing, and I know I harp on this week after week, where I am the user. Arguably, I am the person who paid money for this hardware device. Therefore, it should follow my commands. It should do what I want. And every single time that something in the system makes the explicit delineation that says that I, as the user sitting in front of, physically in contact with this device that I paid for, am not the one calling the shots, it breaks my ideals of how I want to compute. Well, and it pisses me off. I become triggered if you may have noticed.
So I'll talk about this from the corporate day job perspective, because I've had computers. Yeah, I've received computers recently or I've had to reimage computers. Right. In fact, actually today I received a computer from the day job to replace one of one of my computers that is having an epileptic shit fit with its touch bar. Because Apple thought it would be a great idea to add this little strip of touch sensitive things that they could update. The problem is that when it goes bad, I had to create a cron job to kill the server process that automatically starts up, and I have it kill it like every 2 minutes because it just randomly starts up. This is before you add in.
And this is on your work computer.
This is on my work computer. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but my point is that they've switched to this, you know, now pretty much all, whether it's a Windows or Mac, they use, they, you know, they're using like, you know, some sort of, you know, mobile, what they call, you know, some sort of, you know, mobile device management solution, right? Which basically means, yes, this computer is controlled by your organization. And yes, they do all kinds of they do all kinds of things like, yeah, you know, you have to run this other.
Oh yeah, I know. They put the Cloudflare, Checkpoint, whatever that thing that earlier this year that completely nuked everybody's computers.
Well, exactly.
The endpoint security, or, yes. They put shit on there to restrict what you can do. But let me go back if I wasn't clear, because I'm not usually. The caveat to my giant long rant about, you know, this is my computer, so fuck you, it needs to do what I want to do. I absolutely believe that, but every single time that I say something about that, somebody comes up with, well, yes, but sometimes, you know, the company says that you can't do this on. Okay, that's fine. If the company is handing you a computer, it's not your computer, it's their computer. Use it within the lines that they draw. It's when they say you will be putting our shit on your computer and now it's not your computer anymore. No, bitch, that's a fucking rootkit. You are making a vulnerability. Saying I have to put this delivery app on my personal phone is an exploit.
Well, especially, yeah, I mean, it honestly, yeah, it is. But people have kind of, it's weird because there used to be this sort of separate, we used to have our work phone and our personal phone. And at some point I decided to switch to this. And yeah. Part of it would have to do with just kind of the state of my personal life at that time.
And you can keep very happy as long as you can keep that boundary up between your work device and your personal device.
Yeah. So as a result, I don't have things like Teams or our, yeah, you know, or mobile security app or whatever else. Right. When I'm done working on Friday, yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily put my phone in a drawer, but I don't look at it until Sunday, probably, unless there's something vibrating or something, you know, that I happen to be in the room, but I don't carry it. I don't. It's like it's over
my
there.
My company,
right?
still
it's a separate thing, and I don't have those apps. It's having that separation, and there's something to be said for having, you know, because unfortunately I have to do things on my phone sometimes when I'm, you know, for the day job.
My company still does most of their communications via WhatsApp, and I'm not putting that shit on my personal phone. So I don't have WhatsApp, and they're aware that I don't have WhatsApp
and that's a
huge vulnerability in and of itself. WhatsApp is about as insecure as a fucking wooden gate with nothing around it.
So I have, you know, I'm very polite about it, and I'm not confrontational or anything, but I've drawn a line. I will not be putting this on my personal phone. If you would like me to have it, provide me hardware, and I will use that hardware.
And pay for the service, no less.
Huh?
And pay for the service for it, right?
Wait, does it cost money?
Well, no. I'm talking about the connectivity.
Oh, the phone. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you have to have, you know,
I've actually dug into this. The reason why you have to have a phone is because the sign up process can only happen on the phone app and it needs a phone number. So what I've told them is give me a phone so that I can create an account. I will then use that account with the web interface. I will be perfectly happy with that.
They
haven't. And so I don't get these communications they send. And you know what? It turns out that I can do my job without it. So here we are.
Exactly. We talked about this on the other show, but I think it's relevant here. It's these kind of things, right? Sometimes when people push back sometimes, right? We need to push back on this bullshit because this assumption, I was reading a story. This is one of the stories. It's like, oh yeah, everybody's got a smartphone.
I lobotomized mine.
Yeah. You don't. Yeah. You're lobotomized.
It's not that
yours.
Smart anymore.
No, it's as dumb as a post.
Okay. Can I jump in here for like 2 seconds between?
Oh, we prefer you don't. Okay. Go ahead.
To take it back to what you guys were talking about before with things supposed to be doing what they're supposed to, and, you know, the company doesn't own my computer thing, so...
Because fuck Windows.
I've got a fucked up memory stick, apparently, causing BIOS
you
issues
or your
on,
computer?
Yeah. On my brand new computer that's less than 6 months old.
Yeah, well, yeah, the Windows memory test said, yeah, there might be a bad DIM. So,
oh, you mean on your computer?
Yeah,
on
the physical
computer. Bernadette.
Well, no, you started that with saying, I've got a fucked up memory. I'm like, really?
No, memory stick. I've got a DIM stick that shit the bed less than 6 months
old. You've
after
got a DIM stick. You know what? That you can see a psychiatrist about that.
Yes, and there's meds, I'm sure.
You could also see Dr. Ruth Westheimer. Wait a minute, that's a different...
She's dead.
Well, there's that.
And I did. Proof. Because he ISO'd it, I did say fucked up memory stick. For clarity.
Yes, exactly. However, he just decided to not share all the words.
Although I do like the fact that he grabbed that ISO. That's money. So. Yeah, I could not believe it because it was randomly crashing and not giving a dump file.
Yeah, I
then finally it decided to do something that would produce a dump file, and we went in. We were like,
"Yeah,
are you joking?"
I did some research and kind of went, yeah, we might want to run that just to make sure. And I went, yeah. Oh, yeah, I need to figure out which DIM is bad and get it replaced.
And the funny thing is, in my A-plus hardware class, I literally just went through how to do the replacement of this shit. If I'm lying, I'm dying. It's almost like the universe was like, hey, you're always bitching that this is all simulator. Well, here's an actual physical hardware you get to work on now.
Yeah,
and it's your own.
Yeah, I need to actually figure out how to open the damn laptop because, you know.
I can tell you that as a long time software debugger, you know, a developer tester, as a software guy for a very long time, it's always a hardware problem.
Well, of course.
But in seriousness, would you not be pissed, Sir Bemrose, if you spent $1,500 on a laptop and less than 6 months later you had to potentially replace a
yes.
memory stick?
Yes, and I'd probably be contacting whoever sent it to me and be like, you're going to make this right, aren't you?
Was Amazon. I bought it through Amazon.
Yeah, but I mean, you got an HP or something. It's whatever.
Oh, it's a fucking HP. That's why I have Hack the Planet over the HP logo. And even impressed my professor by that when he saw Bernadette the first time, because right where the HP logo is, it says Hack the Planet. And he was like, Hack the Planet. Okay. The man doesn't. My professors don't know what to do with me at this point. Thank the stars. All of my classes next semester, except for my internship, are online because I'm pretty sure I've caused both the environmental science and the philosophy professor to go bald by now.
I got to respond to NetNet in the chat room. He says, try a mechanical keyboard that you dumped a bottle of Fanta on. All I can say is if your mechanical keyboard uses blue switches, you're already hammering those keys with my little sledgehammers, and it doesn't really matter how sticky they are.
Dude, I would say if it's a mech keyboard, you would just pop the keys off and try to do some very careful, cleaning of that thing.
I'm just saying, I could dump, you know, a soda a day in this one. I use blue switches. I already hit it hard enough to make contact, no matter how sticky. I could stick duct tape between these keys. You brown switch pussies.
Yeah, because he did say it is a brown switch. Yes, Fazilla, I know. That's what's wrong with it. It's HP. Yeah, I know. Please do not remind me I've had to lower myself to the standard of owning a Windows machine simply for the purpose of creating.
I was about to point out it also has Windows on it.
Well, that's the biggest problem that I have with it. I love the big screen. I love that it's touch. There's several things about this that I truly enjoy. The fact I have to run Windows on it is not one.
You know what else has a big screen? My desktop.
Okay, fair enough, but I can't bring my desktop to my class for...
Not with that attitude.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I actually did that more than once in college.
Here's the thing, Ned. Isopropyl alcohol actually does not do well cleaning things like soda. To be honest with you, I have tried cleaning things that you would think... alcohol should take straight off.
The sticky bits in soda is sugar. You know what the best solvent for sugar is? Water. Now, you dry the thing really, really well when you're, but yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm done. I'm done with that tangent.
All right. So maybe should I do another story here? Because I've got a story.
Please,
now that we're done zapping off.
No, we're not. We're 45 minutes into it. We still haven't finished fapping yet.
Please, somebody do another story. Okay. For the love of God.
Yes. Why Windows sucks and how to fix it, according to a former Microsoft engineer.
Okay.
Oh, okay. How long do we have in this podcast?
I was going to say, I just kicked the cat. Sorry, Cash.
As long as we want.
I did not set that up, though, about bitching about Bernadette knowing he had that story because I didn't know what he was bringing. Yeah. That was just happenstance. Yeah.
So in a recent YouTube video, former Microsoft programmer Dave Plummer, who helped develop the Windows Task Manager and the Zip Archive tool, shared thoughts on Windows. It sucks, Plummer said right at the top of the video. However,
I helped develop the Windows Task Manager too, bitch.
Yeah. Rather than
I filed a bug once.
Yeah. Rather than leaving it that way with a provocative statement, he went on to explain why he feels that way. By trying to be all things to all people, from beginners to power users to developers, Windows takes a simple approach, often trying to hold your hand or steer you to other apps and services that you don't necessarily need. In this regard, Plummer thinks there should be a professional mode for power users that dispenses with the hand-holding and lets you use the operating system the way you want, not the way Microsoft wants. I mean, I kind of can't argue with that. I mean,
yeah, there was one. It was called NT4.
Yes, exactly.
They've been pretty much progressively Fisher-Price dumbing it down ever since.
Yes. But
trust me, I have filed that bug in 20 different variations every single release that I worked on Windows. Every single time I was like, power user, you are dumbing the system down. You are catering to newbies. People are only newbies for a couple months. Then they're regular users for a long time. And you are pissing off the power users and driving them away. And the response every single time that I got that bug was from somebody who was usually a program manager and usually not an engineer. And most of the time, not even a power user, because they got hired. I was going to say they got hired for their line of bullshit and not their technical skills, but these days it's more like their skin color. Yeah.
Oh, you mean they were melanin enhanced?
I don't want to be racist on this show, but yeah, that happens a lot.
No, I'm the racist one. That's why I was saying, yeah, they were melanin enhanced.
And I can tell you, not quite as much when I was there, which was over a decade ago now, but as I was leaving, I can tell you that the number of people who were not just of Indian descent, but actually Indians at the company was approaching 50%. And that was a decade ago.
Microsoft was probably one of the minority biggest proponents of the H-1B visa program.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things I don't. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing I'll say about my day job. Yeah, they don't do any of that shit.
But at the risk of talking politics on this show, which I shouldn't do, there was apparently a big thing this week about Trump saying the H-1B visa was good because Americans are stupid.
Did he really say that, though?
Yeah, well, he didn't say they were stupid. He said that we need it because there are people with special skills. And the interviewer pressed him on, well, Americans have skills. And he said, no, they don't. They need training. Or something like that.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to be the unpopular one here to make the statement that if we didn't allow all these illegals into the country and then piss and moan because, oh, they're taking all the jobs. No, you lazy bastard. You won't pick the vegetables. You won't do the jobs that the illegals do. You won't clean the houses. So as long as you want the vegetables at a reasonable price and the houses clean, shut the fuck up. Although, having said that, if you're not here legally, get the fuck out.
And on that note...
yeah, anyway.
I told you I was the one who was going to be racist here. You don't have to, Sir Bemrose.
Yes. So,
but I've reserved the right.
Yeah. So, but... Now, but Plummer, okay, so Plummer goes beyond the gripe that actual design of Windows. Rather, he also thinks faults Microsoft for turning Windows into less of a usable OS and more of a telemetry tool that doesn't respect your privacy. Yeah, that too.
Yeah. When I left, that was what was happening, and that was one of the things that was like, I can't be part of this anymore.
And that's what they've been making the most amount of ink about, is the fact that they do not respect privacy, although they purport to, and it's like, you're full of shit. Yeah,
well, I mean, when I left was right after we shipped Windows 8.1 and we're just starting on Windows 10. And I don't know how many people in our audience still remember a tiny little podcast I used to do called Grumpy Old Ben's, but I was famous on that podcast for Windows 10 was all the rage. Everybody was using Windows 10, and I was sticking to Windows 8.1. And everybody's like, "Oh, why do you keep staying? You know, the UI sucks." And yeah, okay, maybe the stupid big push button screen that came up when you hit the start button. Yeah, that was annoying. I didn't like that about Windows 8. You know what I did? I didn't use that. I used the command prompt. It was great. But you know what Windows 8 didn't do was all the goddamn telemetry.
Exactly.
And I stuck with Windows 8 for as long as I was capable of doing it. And then Windows 8 went completely out of service. And I was like, okay, this is now a security problem. And I moved, I upgraded to not Windows.
Yeah, exactly. I installed Windows. It said Windows 95 or better, so I installed Linux. I mean, that's
yeah, no, exactly.
Because Linux is better by far. That's why I actually said I want to undo and put in Linux on Bernadette, because I fucking hate Windows.
Yeah, we'll
and the funny thing is, now all the people are nostalgic going, "No, don't take away my Windows 10. Like, you understand how long
Windows
your frog
11?
Has been boiling.
I mean, seriously, you're not going to be able to keep everybody
happy.
No,
I understand. I understand that Windows 11 is all of the giant heap of shit that is Windows 10 with another layer of shit on top. I get that Windows 10 is superior to 11. But you know what? 8 was superior to 10 because it didn't have the extra shit. 7 was superior to 8 because it did. I mean, Windows has been going downhill for quite a long time now.
It started going downhill. What are you talking about?
Okay, if I may.
Windows 3 was pretty fucking awesome.
I don't know what back end runs the website for my college, but our RaiderNet, because we're the Raiders, woo, big fucking deal. It's horrible. They changed it right before fall sign up, I think. And it is the worst UI I've ever dealt with. Even Phoneboy, with 30 plus experience in this industry, is going, "I can't work this fucking thing." And I'm like, "I know. Thank God I only have
one." Use a blink tag.
Do what?
It needs more blink tags.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it needs. Yeah,
does anybody here remember the marquee tag?
Oh, God.
I have effectively recommended a sledgehammer. That recommendation got refused. I would love to have a conversation with whoever changed it and say, fucking change it back, because it is completely not user-friendly. It's confusing. As if the other one wasn't bad enough, this one, like, decided, hold my beer. Let's see how absolutely difficult we can make trying to register for classes. Oh, it's gross. However, I do have something, because I think we're done fapping about that one, are we not?
Yeah, we are, yeah.
Did he finish reading it?
I've got a couple more. Well, I mean, I only pull a few paragraphs, right? But here's I think we did. Let me finish what I said. So Plummer argues that Microsoft needs telemetry on how people use Windows to develop the OS. Now, that's a good point, but he also believes the company needs to be more transparent about all the data it wants to collect. Here, Plummer suggests that Windows should include a privacy ledger, a system log, that would list every piece of telemetry with clear details on what it is for and why Microsoft wants it. Now, the thing that really bothered me about Windows 11 was the fact that they want you to have a fucking Microsoft account to use your own goddamn computer.
That's the problem.
That definitely bothers a lot of people.
Yes, because so like when I did Mama's computer, when I did your computer, honey, I figured out how to go through the, you know, and in fact when you and I did this on a Windows computer for work, right, where I had to, in order to upgrade it to Windows 11, I had to basically reinstall it right from scratch. And so yeah,
you keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Exactly. Yes, I know. It was, but anyway, the point is because Windows 10 is end of support, and yeah, anyway, I had to go through the upgrade process, and anyway, but this whole, you have to go through this whole fucking process just to use local accounts, and it's like, what the actual fuck, people? Like,
well,
why
clearly
is
they don't want you using local accounts. Duh. I mean, that seems pretty explanatory.
Yeah, I know, but this is how far off it's gotten. It's like you have to be connected to the internet in order to use your own fucking computer.
It's a scam.
It's a scam, as JCD says. But
you know, I wasn't going to bring this as a story, but this drops into a personal experience that I had only 2 days ago. That that had me, my microphone wasn't even on, and I did like a 15, 20 minute podcast at my wall because I was so pissed about this. It has to do with two companies, Valve and Bethesda, and a game, a nice ancient 10-year-old game called Fallout 4, which is something I still play occasionally. Well, I did until 2 days ago. Motherfuckers! Because Fallout 4, 10-year-old game, Bethesda games in general tend to be buggy and have some serious interface issues. The only reason why people still play it 10 years later is because there are a lot of mods that give quality of life benefits, that give new content, stuff like that. So it pretty much is, it was a fairly stable 10-year-old platform that people could then use to build on and build cool experiences. As far as I'm concerned, that is the kind of game that I like playing. Bethesda decided, just for shits and giggles, they were going to release an anniversary version, 10 years. What they're doing is they're taking a bunch of the paid mods because they decided that they wanted to, when they realized how popular Skyrim was to mod, they decided that they wanted to bring in, cash in on the mod scene. And so they added a mod menu into the game and their own mod store that you could pay money for. And it never took off because the free mod stores had all the better mods. The people who grew up modding Skyrim and Fallout already looked at this and said, we're quite happy not being under the thumb of Bethesda. Oh yeah. And by the way, Bethesda of course have all these content restrictions. Like you can't have any mods that take the clothing off the characters. And if you can't do that, then why even bother with their games?
Now, is this Fallout 4 part of the Fallout series? I know that sounds dumb.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Okay, because my son...
It is the fifth game in the Fallout series.
Okay, because...
Or I'm the sixth, depending on how you're counting.
Pretty sure I have sat for countless hours and watched my youngest son, Phoenix Jr., play Fallout. I never understood it, but it was like, okay, dude, if it makes you happy, I'll sit here and smoke a fucking bowl with you and watch you play this game.
That works. It is...
I don't understand games.
It is a nice blend between... a shooter and an RPG. But anyway.
Now if this is the game I'm thinking of, it's the one where basically the world has fucking gone to hell and you're underground.
You start out underground.
Okay. It is the one I'm thinking of. They made a movie of it recently. Yeah.
Yes, they did make like a series or something. I haven't watched it because it was on one of the streaming services.
Probably lame.
Yeah.
All streaming.
But anyway, it doesn't even matter. The game could be Tetris for all it matters. The fact is, people still play it. People play it because of mods. And Bethesda came out and decided that they were going to, with much fanfare, release an anniversary edition. The two things the anniversary edition does is it adds some kind of modding menu and then brings in a bunch of the mods from their store as official content. And whatever the fact, it's basically an infinitesimal gameplay fix, but it required a new binary. New binary means that all of the places that the mods can hook in suddenly are not there anymore. So once you put this new binary on, all of your mods break and you're back to vanilla game, which we already established is really, I mean, if you're used to the quality of life things like the big screen menus and, you don't want to play without mods. So they broke the game. The game is absolutely broken if you download the binary. Now, that was Bethesda. They went ahead and released something that nobody asked for. But here's the part where it really starts to suck. If you get this game on Steam, which, by the way, because Bethesda only releases for Windows... if you want to play on Linux, Steam is pretty much the only game in town. Then Valve, who in their wisdom have decided that all games shall be fully updated at all times and do not have a Switch that says, no, hold on, this game broke everything. Let's just hold off for... No. Every single person who Wednesday morning tried to launch Fallout 4 immediately got... Steam is now updating your game. which downloaded the new binary, broke everything, completely fucked over every working installation of the game.
They've been doing a lot of that lately. Steam is one of the worst for just, you think you own your game or whatever, boop, no you don't.
I posted about this on the Fetty, and the one response that I got that was at least well, or at least thought out was, well, you know, Valve could just fix this by putting in a checkbox that says, don't update this game. Yes, yes, they could.
But
that is
won't.
Absolutely the most requested feature ever on Steam, and Valve will not do it because their philosophy is, fuck you, you installed by Steam, we own your game. In fact, they actually came out a couple years ago as a big news story where they clarified their terms of service that says, no, when you pay us money for a game, you do not own the game and you do not have the right to decide what you get. You will get what we give you and fuck you, was their clarification.
Or we can just, you know, shut down your account and you have no recourse. Thank you, Drive-Thru.
And I won't play, by the way, just to be clear, Fallout 4 is a single player game. That's why I'm okay with playing with mods. That's why I'm okay with hacking it. And that is why it should be fine to not fucking update. Because it was working and it's a single player game. Every single argument about you shouldn't be modding your system or your game comes from the argument of, well, in these competitive multiplayer games that have real leaderboarded, real people with real money riding on it, we don't want cheaters. And you know what? I will never, ever play a competitive game on Steam because the moment that they scan my hard drive and discover a debugger, they can ban my account. The terms of service says they can. And then you've lost everything that you've ever purchased, by the way. You know, it's a digital library, of course.
We don't fucking play games that are strictly online and can be taken away at the flip of a switch, click of a button.
I don't play games that require an online component because
exactly.
and so that's why, by the way, I still play 10-year-old single player games and can be perfectly happy with it as long as you don't have an auto update mechanism automatically fucking over my perfectly working system. And at this point, the game is right now completely unplayable. In a couple weeks, the modding community will finally have had a chance to analyze the binary. There is a good chance that new versions of most of the mods will come out, or at least new shims and things. And in a couple weeks, I will be able to put in 5 or 6 hours worth of work trying to get my system back to a level where it was already before Valve decided to come into my system uninvited and fuck my install.
Yeah, well,
so
yeah.
As somebody who is hopelessly addicted to video games, this bothers me slightly.
Yeah, well, there's a reason. Yes. There's a reason. Some of the games I play run a MAME emulator, and they're not updating that shit. So I get to control when that gets updated, and if it fucking works, I don't have to do a damn thing to it. It'll just continue to work. So.
Well, here's the beautiful thing. We have talked about social media, and we have talked about updates, and I have a story that actually marries the two together in an unholy matrimony.
Very quickly, we have not talked about AI.
We are not talking about AI. I didn't bring AI stories either, Sir Bemrose.
I actually do have two AI stories.
You and I, Sir Bemrose, are the only ones with integrity that didn't bring AI.
You're the only ones who are going to be allowed to bring stories this time?
Apparently.
Well, I mean, they're showing how AI is stupid, so I think that's...
Yeah, but, okay, so wait a minute, because now I have a third one.
We do that every episode.
Now I have why you shouldn't use social media, why everything is stupid. Yeah, so here we go.
Why it's all fake and gay.
It's all fake and gay, and no surprise to anyone, X users are getting locked out in the cold after a botched authorization switch. Now wait, because it's good. It's real good. Because here's the thing. Back in May of 2024, when Twitter became X, okay, users were warned that if they didn't migrate their passkey or hardware security key authentication by November 10th, which is now 4 days ago, they would be locked out of their accounts until they migrated or chose a different form of authentication. Well, guess what? We've got a bunch of users who, of course...
You snooze, you lose?
Yeah, pretty much, because All those who didn't do so by the deadline are now being sent into endless loops to re-enroll and choose a form of two-factor authentication. And they're experiencing error messages during migration or being caught in perpetual loops of redirects, like I said.
Can you give me a quick spoiler on how I'm supposed to feel about this? Because at the moment, I'm having a lot of trouble generating sympathy for these people.
No, zero sympathy. If anything, I'm fucking laughing going,
this is a result of your action, dumb fuck.
Or inaction, like you did not give a fuck about the system for all this time, and now you suddenly care?
And
you know the only reason these people even tried to authenticate is because somebody on Twitter told them, hey, you need to try authenticating.
Well, it's funny because Outage Tracker, which is tracking Down Detector, and it's showing that, you know, users are still struggling to log in 3 days, now 4 days, after the deadline. And of course, you know, X isn't releasing an official comment because, quite frankly, they told you all, you have until November 10th, period, dot. After that, it's going to be real fucking hard and login is going to be a nightmare. Again, you did this, not us. Now, of course, this isn't the first time that X has been subject to a botched security change, because in 23, the Tor Onion service that allowed users in areas with restricted or censored internet access to Twitter went down. And of course, you know, thanks to Musk's layoffs, the service remained offline.
All of Tor went down? Like, did somebody at the FBI trip over the cord or something?
I don't know. All it says is that in 2023, the Tor Onion service that allowed users in areas with restricted or censored internet access to Twitter went down, and thanks to massive layoffs, it remained offline.
No, it was the NSA that was responsible.
Oh, is it? Yeah, I'm sorry. I keep forgetting that some people think there are differences between the three-letter agencies.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, they're not. They're all equally corrupt for different reasons. But, yeah, so, I mean, yeah, that... I'm kind of looking at this and I'm going, people are so addicted to their social media. You realize that you can go create another fucking account if you want to.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, but then you wouldn't have your 3,333 fucking followers or friends.
If I may try to summon up some sympathy for these people who have clearly been inattentive to the needs of their account. This story is kind of like the Steam Valve Bethesda thing that I just ranted about, in so much as these people had a working system and the company came in and couldn't leave well enough alone and decided to fuck with something and the working system broke. And that generates anguish, people getting annoyed. Okay, I get that.
Yes and no, because here's the thing.
But then again, Twitter is an online system.
But if they tried to migrate prior, like if they had not waited till the 11th hour of the 11th minute of the 11th day type thing, guess what?
Like the 11th month.
Whatever. If you hadn't waited until the very last minute, until the D-Day, you would not be in this situation. Again, you did this to you if you are an X user and you're being blocked because you didn't switch how you authenticate to your thing. I feel zero sympathy for these fucking mouth breathers. I really do. Of course, I'm not a fan of social media, but at the end of the day, I think it's funny that a lot of users, millions, in fact, are flocking to the alternative of Blue Sky.
Blue Sky is just another fucking one of these.
That's not an alternative.
And they list it as an alternative. I'm not weighing in.
Well, okay, then they're slanted because Blue Sky is not... Like, an alternative means that you can replace one with the other. And,
no, you're just replacing one fake and gay social media with another fake and gay social media.
But I mean, Twitter has a global reach and is more or less inclusive of everybody. Blue Sky is a leftist cesspool. If you happen to be far left, then you can seamlessly go from one to the other And as long as you are only immersing yourself in a tiny little corrupt information bubble, then yes, they might look exactly the same. But if you're not, if you don't go to Twitter expecting to be wrapped up in woke thoughts, Blue Sky, there's nothing there that's the same.
Well, there are all of these platforms that really do, you know, it's because, I don't know, at some point I finally, you know, I think it was, you know, I mean, when I took the apps off my phone, I saw all these other things going. I'm like, yeah, I'm not fucking getting involved in this because I don't see any benefit to doing it. And
I don't have a Twitter account either.
Yeah. Well, I've had a Twitter account since like 2006 when it was called TWTTR back in the day. Cause that was, yeah, because, you know, in the early 2000s, you had to, that was how you named your services, was you eliminated. Actually, was it probably even called something else? I can't even remember. But I, yeah, like my UID number is a low four digit number, right?
It's are you fucking bragging again?
No, yeah, no. Yes. I mean,
it doesn't sound like bragging much.
No,
much.
But the point, but I mean, and everything's been shitified. I mean, it's all of these things are supposed to, you know, there was. You know, social media was about actually connecting with real people. What did they do? They fucking drove engagement. What did that do? It took us away from engaging with people. It's all
about... Yeah, it did the exact opposite of what it was expected to do. And it's really simple because in my opinion, as a person who does not use social media, however, is aware of it and has in the past used it, it's all the same. It's look how important I think I am, because you think people give a shit what your morning constitution looked like, what you're having for breakfast, what you're wearing, or how your husband boffed you last night. Give me a break. Stop thinking you are that damn important, people. I can assure you, you are not. People don't give a ripe stank fuck about what you ate for breakfast, the fact you ran 5 miles this morning. You think you have friends, but like I said, how many of them can you call to help you bury a body or bail you out at 3 a.m.? Thank you, drive-through.
What she said. That comment about you ran 5 miles, that wasn't directed at anyone in particular on this podcast, was it?
No, because I don't know. Did you post your nipple pics to Facebag?
I may have at some point, but no.
Egomaniac. I don't think you did. I mean, I think the dong is the only place you got to see the tits.
I get what you're describing, but I would argue that social media, there are more than just narcissists who exist there. It just turns out that the narcissists flood post so much more than anyone else that it's the bulk of the content you see.
And that's pretty much what drove me away from it. For the exact thing that Foamboy was talking about, is that if I'm going to use the term friend, to me, that's a very significant term. I don't just meet you and go, oh, we're friends. No, you're an acquaintance. You're someone whom I know. In order to earn the friend moniker, you really have to invest some time to get to know each other, etc. I just find it so gross that people are like, I have 33,000 friends on Facebook. Really, Karen? And how many of them do you actually know? Have you had a coffee with? Have you sat down and had dinner with? That's what I thought. Shut the fuck up.
For lack of a better definition, I like going with Dvorak's definition, which is it's somebody that you've been to their house and had dinner with.
That's a great description.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. If you have face-to-face met this person, that you can call a friend. Somebody who's like, oh, I like the way you're dressed. We're friends. No.
Yeah. And I've met some really cool people. But anyway, that's a whole different discussion.
I was just thinking of all the social networks that I'm on. You know, the Fediverse is probably the biggest. I have a tiny little presence on Discord, although... You know, if I went into my Discord app, which I use for a very specific thing, I have a very small private server that I use, among other things, as a free CDN, which puts out cancerous URLs.
Yeah,
but I do know on Discord in my account, if I went to the friend invites thing, I probably got 24 invites that I've just, like, I'm not even saying thumbs up or thumbs down. I just ignore that section of the app because I'm not here looking for friends.
I don't know how you install that app, Sir Bemrose. I truly don't, because I remember having to put this app on my son's computer years ago, and I'm like, this thing is fucking cancer.
It is.
Yeah.
I Why? I run the APK.
No, it's a chat app, honey. It's like, you know, we use this thing called IRC for the show, right? For the live chat, right? IRC is really good. It doesn't do a whole lot, and it does exactly what it needs to do. There's lots of clients that figured,
Zero Node is a social network.
Yes, it is, and in fact, we use it all the time. And the fact that, you know, that I've got my own sort of
Stream is an antisocial network.
Exactly, it's an antisocial.
We are, and we're very proud to be an antisocial network because we basically make our position extremely clear.
Yeah, but if you have to be this tall to ride, right? I mean, this is, you know.
Hey! You might want to lower that bar. I'm not that tall.
Yeah. Let him talk, Shorty.
Yes.
He got the joke even though you didn't, Sir Bemrose.
Yeah. What the hell?
I know this isn't the Lotus Effect. 5 Eastern, 4 Central.
Only on Friday, Saturdays. Lotus Effect.live.
Anyway. Couldn't help but get one shameless plug in during the show.
Exactly.
Oh, you could have.
Yeah, but I didn't.
Yeah,
I can tell.
Yes, exactly.
That's the reason you tune in.
All right. So if I go. Okay, so.
Do you got anything else before we let Phone Boy fap?
How about Ryanair is going to digital-only boarding passes. Oh,
God damn it!
Actually, I have that.
We had that for tomorrow's show.
Yeah, we have that for tomorrow's show, actually. But that, go ahead.
You like me to spoil it, or would you like me to... Would you like to owe me a favor and I'll leave it alone?
No, go ahead and do it, dude. Seriously, like, why not?
We can find another story, but I was offended when I found that.
I am offended too, and I was hoping you would be offended alongside me. I'll start with a quote from the face who was pushing this from the company. It says, almost 100% of passengers have smartphones, and we want to move everybody onto that smartphone technology. So in order to access the boarding pass, you have to download the Ryanair app.
Yeah.
How about
You have to download the app because you have to use the app to, quote, check in at least 24 hours prior to the flight. And, of course, anybody who is familiar with Ryanair, which is mostly Europeans on account of Ryanair doesn't have any flights in the United States. So I've never flown it. But they are a super low cost, low frills, low service airline who pretty much makes up all of their low prices on nickel and diming you to death. So if you do not check in by the app at least 24 hours before your flight, and by the way, they said this was going into effect on November 12th, which I guess is now in the past.
So basically, the message here is don't fly Ryanair.
Yeah. If you don't check in, if you don't use the app to check in at least 24 hours before your flight, then that's okay. We will accommodate you at the airport for an extra fee, £55.
Yes. What?
This is extortion.
Yeah. It's funny because, like I said, I have a link for that. Which source did you use? Use the Telegraph or did you use, what did you use?
I got it from Ars Technica, which is my favorite tech site to hate.
Yeah, awesome. But at least I'm okay. But at least they're coherent, unlike a lot of other fucking sites.
They provide actual information. It might not always be correct, but nobody is. No. They at least, like, their stories tend to be internally consistent and are written by somebody who seems to at least have a grasp of the stuff he's talking about. Unlike that TechSpot story I was reading earlier.
Yeah. I mean, they're Condé Nast, so they're the same company that owns Wired. So, you know, figure that in.
Well, yes, but
Wired
is
gone to
shit.
But
I will give Ars Technica credit in that I can read one of their stories in less than a day.
Well, this is true, right? I mean, the article I pulled was from El Reg, but same basic idea.
That's only because you fucking love El Reg.
Yeah, El Reg is, yeah. I mean, I pulled stories from El Reg and Ars Technica, so I mean,
If I may read between the lines for the quote that I read, what we would really like to do, you know, given that we are, you know, we're bringing in the customers by having super low fares and we're trying to make up our costs everywhere else. So what we'd really like to do is collect data on every single person who boards so that we can sell it. I think that's kind of what reading between the lines of that quote was.
I think you're correct.
You're not wrong.
So, as of the change, you can no longer print paper boarding passes at home. People who don't check in by the app will have to pay an extra fee. And they say, you know, what about accessibility? The biggest complaint was, well, what if my phone dies? Like, then you should have charged it, dumbass. But, you know, some people have installed 75 apps and then worn out their battery. So the battery lasts about 3 minutes before it dies. I get that.
Well, that's why intelligent people like yours truly carries a purse that, I call it a purse. It's a fucking sling bag. And it has a connection to put a battery bank in it. So you're never.
I charge my phone at home once a week, whether it needs it or not.
Well, that's because you don't use your tech as much as we do.
Exactly. Yes. But there seems to be a lesson in there somewhere.
Funny that. But I think there's also a lesson in this story. Seriously, don't use Ryanair. I mean,
that's kind of my takeaway. But as Americans, it's really easy to not use Ryanair. Let's admit that.
Okay, so let's ask someone who I'll consider an expert, PhoneBoy. What other airlines are there if you are traveling in Europe and surrounding areas?
Oh, there's plenty of airlines.
You're on mute.
Yeah, there's plenty of airlines. So
Ryanair is not like the one and only.
Yeah, they're low cost. I mean,
they're like the Southwest of Europe.
Yeah, except they're worse than Southwest. Oh, Southwest, unfortunately, is not Southwest.
Imagine
anymore.
Southwest, but you make the seats 3 inches narrower and cram more people, and then they're like, oh, yeah, every ticket only costs $5. But if you want to look at the plane, that's an extra 15. And if you want to
20 pounds for your luggage,
walk near. Yeah. This much for your luggage, this much for boarding ramp fees.
That's how they get you. Sounds like the Gillette model to me.
Yeah. We all know Spirit Airlines like that. Same thing.
Spirit is, I think, who I was thinking of, not Southwest. Although, you know, Southwest is coming to K-Town. They're going to start.
They're also acting like a regular, like assigned seats and stuff. I don't know that they're going to.
They stopped that whole shit and customers got real butthurt over the fact that now there's assigned seating, blah, blah, wolf.
Yeah, but let's admit it. Every time that, you know, a thing happens, customers get butthurt.
I mean, truly, like just breathing, customers get butthurt.
Yeah, company exists. Customers get butthurt.
True.
Yeah, no kidding.
Let's see. They did mention accessibility in the Ars Technica article. You know, what my favorite comment, which wasn't from Ars Technica, it was where I originally found this on Slashdot. Actually, I originally found this because it was posted on the Fediverse by Progo, who is an amazing source of
love Progo.
Stories that piss me off.
We've invited him to be on, you had your ill episode and you got the dame to fill in, which we appreciate you for. She was amazing. But we had actually reached out to Progo and said, hey.
Yeah, we also offered him, too. It's like, hey, you offered us. He said, hey, look, if you need
he's cool.
We had Progo on Grumpy Old Ben's a couple times.
He
was not the fastest speaking guest we ever had on Grumpy Old Ben's, but he was up there.
Okay, so now we def have to have Progo on, because if that fap ass show that no longer exists because somebody likes Taylor Swift too much, we definitely have to have him on. We can't let those motherfuckers beat us.
Yeah, well, they've had me on. I've already.
Yes.
Well, that just shows the low quality of that podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, my comment about Progo wasn't the fastest speaking guest we ever had on was because we had an over-caffeinated phone boy on.
Unfortunately, on more than one occasion, yes.
Unfortunately, PhoneBoy has great thoughts. It just takes 20 minutes to get them out between the,
I'm just saying that back then, that wasn't, he did not speak like he had recently had a toke.
Breaking the balls. This is true, because I wasn't
doing that
back then.
Well, because you weren't toking back then,
No,
PhoneBoy.
Back then, you spoke as though you were, had the microphone in front of you while you were jogging with a caffeine IV.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I'm far off the truth.
Old phone boy versus new phone boy. Is there really a difference? Weigh in 253-237-3321.
Jesus Christ.
So on the accessibility, you know, what happens about the people who can't read the 0 pixel font on smartphones and stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
This is the part where they, you know, if you checked in by the app, then, the desk at the airport can print a boarding pass for you. The comment on Slashdot, which is where I stole that zero pixel line from, also pointed out that Ireland has very similar accessibility laws from the United States' ADA, where there's a lot of things, a lot of companies that would like to go smartphone only for a lot of services, and the ADA kind of says, no, you need another option too.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, God, the ADA, anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah, data grab.
Yeah, data grab. Okay, so I'm gonna ask you a question because I've got one story that's not AI, but I've got two AI stories. I'm gonna move one of them to Lotus. So which one would you like to see me cover?
Door number three.
Yeah, door number three, exactly. Well,
I don't know which one that is.
Yeah. So five AI developed malware families analyzed by Google fail to work and are easily detected, or Google is rolling out controversial shopping and ads in AI mode search. Which one would you like to rant about?
Phoenix, which one would you rather not have pollute your sacred show tomorrow?
Unfortunately, she had to, anyway.
Oh.
So.
Oh, yeah, oh. Yeah. Ben Rosing.
Yeah, something along those lines, yeah. Terrible timing. Yes, exactly. Terrible timing. All right. Well, I think this one's probably going to cause the most rants here. Google is rolling, because we've talked about it here. Google is rolling out controversial shopping and ads in AI mode search, which is just, yes, because Google has promised to inject generative AI into the online shopping experience, and it's following through now because it's announced shopping features of AI mode search are rolling out, and Gemini will also worm its way into Google's forgotten duplex and automated phone call tech. And it's all coming in time for the holidays to allegedly make your gifting more convenient and also conveniently ensure that Google gets a piece of the action. Oh, God.
Silicon Valley has always been out of touch with the general population, but it's actually shocking just how out of touch, like even more so than usual on the AI thing, in so much as they imagine that any human beings want this.
Oh, also, of course not. They don't.
Also, since when is Google a name in online shopping? Do they think they're going to get one with something nobody wants?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, seriously, like, it just blows me away. I mean, I'm kind of sitting here and I look at this and I go, well, geez, like this is just the you know, yeah, nobody wants ads, but I think they kind of accept them because they can kind of tune them out, right? Or theoretically, they can tune them out.
Google has been pretty freaking tone deaf as to what people want. You know, let's come up with a complete list of every really successful Google product. Let's see, there was search.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Gmail was good when it first came out, but like everybody, you know, I don't know, everybody, it's like mail is, I don't know. Anyway, the point is that, yeah, I don't understand the rest of it. I'm just kind of scratching my head. I mean, I know we use Google Docs to do the Lotus Effect. Actually, we actually use that we started that because at the time, I don't know. Anyway, but it's a good way to share a document, but that's about, and I remember, God, when we were using, fuck, what was it, like Google Wave or something, some bullshit like that, where the collaboration or I don't know, it was bullshit. I don't know, fucking. No, I used it back in the day, but, you know, anyway, but that was back in the day. But seriously, I mean, like, okay, so the Google is like, Google wants to fucking inject itself everywhere using AI. And I'm like, there's a reason I pay for Kagi, right? Kagi doesn't give me AI unless I ask for it. And I will say I've used FastGPT to do kind of some, you know, some summaries on some fake and gay things that I suspect that, you know, random people on the internet might actually speak correctly because, you know, it's so bought in and out there, right? It will actually, you know, I actually trust it in that point because it's bullshit anyway, and the bullshit on the internet is out there, and I'm sure it's been trained on it, so it's probably fine, right? But at least I'm not getting, you know, I don't know, at least I'm paying for it, and I'm not getting, you know, I'm not being served ads and being forced into AI, because every time I go to Google, it seems like it wants to do an AI search. And therefore, you know, burn the environment. I mean, you realize that, like, even Bill Gates kind of went, yeah, if we're going to be so environmental, Yeah, we're using a lot of fucking electricity for these AI data centers, right? You know, we're stealing water and doing all this other shit. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't promote the environmental angle of this because it's really obvious it's bullshit.
Silicon Valley gives a crap about the environment only in so much as they can court the extremely vocal environmentalists. They give a crap about the environment just for the purpose of virtue signaling, and that's it.
It's virtue signaling.
The moment that suddenly the environment became an impediment, like, oh, what do you mean that we have to have clean air? We need more power for our AI. Yeah, okay. Yeah, as I sarcastically alluded to, though, Silicon Valley has a serious problem in so much as they are, and by they, I mean mainly the C-suite making the decisions for these companies, but to a lesser extent, all of the Kool-Aid drinking people who are bought in, and plus, their army of ready tech enthusiasts ready to blog at a moment's notice about how awesome $ new technology is. They seem to think that the general public wants AI coming out of every orifice of their lives because they do, because they're like, oh my God, look how cool this AI is. I can put it in my toothbrush. I can put it in my souffle. I can put AI in my dog. Actually, that's kind of happened.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing is, it's the idea is only now starting. And when you read, look for the phrase bubble in a headline to find more information about this. But Silicon Valley in general is only now starting to realize that, this AI has a really cool set of parlor tricks, and we've kind of already seen them all. And unless you're ready to wow us with something that actually changes how we live our lives, they're not that enthused now. And then, oh, by the way, combine that with the one AI effect that is actually affecting how humans live their lives, which is all these C-suite morons going, well, AI can replace all these jobs. And then they fire a bunch of people, put AI in the place, and their products crash because AI really is not a replacement for humans. But they've already fucked up all these employees' lives. So, that's definitely creating an impression of AI that's making people feel very strongly about it, but not in the way that these CEOs want. So when Google comes out here and is like, hey, that's a really cool shopping that, we don't have a part of, maybe we can get more of a part of it by putting in a feature nobody wants. Yeah, this is going the way of Google Buzz.
Yeah, typical Google. But it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I was going to bring a story about, is AI just a bubble, basically? Is it much like the .com thing? And they had these two assholes. I nixed the story because as I'm going through it, it's this conversation between these two obvious idiots. And I'm just like, they interviewed Altman, apparently.
You mean a podcast?
That... I guess it was. It was more in the kind of transcript form. It was like this person talking, that person talking, this person talking, whatever. But it was a news article. That was the weird part. Or I think it was.
Actually, when it's a news article that's a transcript, it really is a transcript of probably some live interview or these days more often a podcast. I just said podcast because you said two idiots who don't know what they're talking about.
Well, two and a half idiots who don't know what they're talking about. That's what this podcast is.
That's when you add AI.
Well, the interesting thing was Altman had the nerve to say, oh, we're not making any money. We actually planned on asking the AI how we could make money, once we did this for the investors. And I'm like, are you shitting me?
The motherfucker does actually worship the technology he works on.
He does.
That is the kind of question that you ask God.
I'm not going to disagree with that. There's a reason that I asked this particular story because I was like, other than the fucking punchline of, oh, we're not making any money, we thought we'd ask the AI how to make money
ask the AI how to make money. That is literally praying to your God, can you please make the harvest good this year?
It is.
Right. Yes, of course.
But that's what ultimately AI is doing. It's a wing and a prayer, as I see it. And
it's making the AI is making the harvest good. How, you may ask? By accelerating global warming, and the warmer temperatures are making the crops bountiful.
Yeah, exactly. It's modification all day.
Oh my God! Yes, and no kidding. Does anybody have any other stories?
I have a DoorDash data breach.
I like this. Can we hear this?
There's not a whole lot.
DoorDash is shit.
Okay, admit it. You secretly want to work DoorDash on the side when there aren't
enough
Lyft jobs.
Not even a bit. I've had the opportunity numerous times. The way I look at DoorDash is if you're too fucking lazy to get your fat ass in the car, turn the key, and drive to McDonald's for your Big Mac and large fry, you deserve your data breached.
Yeah. If you're too lazy to get in the car and drive to K-Town so that you can catch an airplane. Oh, wait, no. On October 5th, 2025, our team identified a cybersecurity incident that involved an unauthorized third party gaining access to and taking certain user contact information, which varied by individual, states an email notification sent from DoorDash to certain users. This email went out yesterday, and if you were listening, which I hope you weren't, October 25th was 3 weeks ago. It took them that long to identify a data breach and notify people about it. Is that normal? First of all, is first question.
Sometimes it can. Yeah. I mean, there's certain guidelines for how long if it's a public company. I don't remember the exact details of it, but yeah, it might take them a few weeks. And I've gotten mails about data breaches that I had no idea that happened about companies that I didn't realize I was doing business with. Physical letters to multiple people, some of which currently live in this house and some of which never lived in this house. You know,
so my next question, which makes me raise an eyebrow, I'm not sure, you know, there isn't enough technical details in the Bleeping Computer article for this, but they say the user contact information, which varied by individual, which I'm not really sure how, like, what is the nature of this breach that the list of types of information that, quote, may have been included, according to the first and last name, physical address, phone number, and email address, but varied by individual, which makes me wonder. Usually a data breach, you know, is a matter of either there's like an open API or, you know, with poor authentication, or a database that you can connect to and just or just a file download or something. What is it that they say? You know, one person, they may have only got your first name, and one person, they got your physical address, and one person, they got your email.
But
how does that work?
Yeah. The question is this. If you're breaching and you're getting this information on one, how are you not getting it on all?
Well, the question is, okay, much like what you experience on the rideshare side of things, right, is that not everybody shares all of the information, right?
And that might be it.
Well, and that's the thing. Only required fields, as far as I'm concerned, are filled in. If it's optional, my option is I'm not sharing it. So you're right. That could be part of it. Now, I have a question, though. Is this just customers, or was this people who actually use the service, like our employees?
It doesn't seem to have been specified in the Bleeping Computer. I looked for that. Was it the customers or the rider or the drivers?
Yeah, because I would be hella pissed if I was doing DoorDash and my info was fucking sniped. Yeah, that's a lawsuit.
You should assume that if you were doing DoorDash, your info was sniped.
Yeah, but I don't do DoorDash because fuck DoorDash, because cater to you fat fucks who will not get off your asses and go get your own dinner.
So,
lunch or otherwise.
You want the punchline? How would you guess the nature of how the data was exfiltrated? You know, I had to sit there and scratch my head because of the comment. But how did they get access? Was it an API? Was it a vulnerability in the app? What do you think?
I'm going developer on this.
Yeah, I'm sure there was some zero-day exploit that, you know, they probably put it on an open S3 bucket. I mean, seriously.
Social engineering. They fished an employee at DoorDash.
Yeah. What the hell?
Sounds like the LastPass hack back in the day.
Lame.
Yep.
Oh my.
I would love to know the exact kind of route. Like, hi, can you just give us all this information on like all these customers, you know?
And the article says, you know, that the moment that DoorDash's IT security department discovered the breach, they revoked the credentials of the individual who was hacked. And they don't give a time frame of how long those credentials were being used.
Well, oh, great.
Well, who knows how long? I mean, it's much like the LastPass thing that occurred, which... Yeah.
Which you still want me to cover.
Well, at some point, yeah. I mean, that was the idea, but I don't know if it's as relevant now. I mean,
it makes me glad I've never, ever used or worked for DoorDash.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, they keep trying to offer it to you on Uber. I mean, isn't it right? I mean,
Uber Eats... Uber deliveries, that stuff is different than DoorDash. DoorDash is a completely separate entity.
Yeah, I understand, but it's a similar idea. That's all I'm saying.
It is a similar idea where you're too lazy to get off your ass and go to McDonald's for your
vanilla
shake.
Yeah, you joke about the fact that when we watch the NFL games, right?
Oh my God, those commercials are great.
Yeah, the commercials are great for it, but they're still fucking commercials. I mean, seriously.
Hold on. Let me back up to your last point, Phoenix. DoorDash and Uber Eats are very separate things. So which one is the one where a fat fuck installs an app, gives a credit card, pays way too fucking much, and food arrives at their doorstep? And if you tipped enough extra money, then your food doesn't have bites taken out. Which one of those is that?
That's Grubhub.
Oh.
Exactly.
But you're not wrong. I've heard some cringeworthy stories come out of these food delivery services. And for one thing, I'm sorry, but this fat fuck is not willing to get out of her car for a $10 McDonald's order that you're going to not tip me on or tip me a whole fucking dollar for going up five fucking flights of stairs in your condo complex. Yeah, no, we're good. I'm sorry. Anyone out there who's ever eaten fast food, you got about 2 minutes, maybe three if you're lucky.
The half-life
of a McDonald's French fry, which is not reheatable.
The moment the beef tallow in the fry drops below about 85 degrees.
They used to use beef tallow.
I'm sorry, the vegetable shortening.
Yeah, I was going to say the canola oil.
Oh my! That's the lotus effect. Sorry,
it's the canola lard.
Exactly.
Oh my!
I love the fact you brought this story, though, Sir Bemrose. Thank you for the triggering experience of the mention of DoorDash, because I just find those people to be absolutely hilarious. Because
I mean, talk about height of laziness. I mean, seriously.
I'm sorry. I'm not that addicted to fast food that I can't like. Okay. If you don't have a vehicle, I can kind of understand.
Let's start with you should not be eating fast food whether you get it or somebody brings it to you.
Oh no, point blank.
And now you're like, I am so fat I can't leave the house, and also I really want to pay twice what I should.
Oh my God, that is not a joke.
It's
like
the epitome
$30
of white privilege.
No, phone boy, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to object to that statement. This ain't white privilege, bro. This is 1,000% fucking I'm just too lazy. White privilege would not be ordering McDonald's. Let's just be honest.
Fair enough.
Yeah, then you're ordering Olive Garden by DoorDash.
No shit, yeah.
Does Applebee's do takeout?
Red Lobster.
God.
Yeah, because nothing gets me revved up harder than cold fucking lobster and clumpy whirl.
It's Waffle House.
Oh my God! Stop triggering me with that shit. There's
I think
nothing
the nearest
better
Waffle
3
House to
m.
here is Oklahoma.
Do what? The nearest one to you is Oklahoma.
The nearest Waffle House to here, I think, is Oklahoma.
You are not missing anything. Have you ever been to Waffle House, Sir Bemrose?
No.
You're not missing a
goddamn thing. No, but I mean, you might as well go.
No.
I've been to a Sonic maybe three times.
Here's the thing, Sir Bemrose.
I have been to a Whataburger.
Oh my God, they literally put one on Cumberland Avenue, basically on campus, and there's another one opening in Turkey Creek.
Yeah, there's also one opening here. They're trying to do one here.
Are they trying to put one here?
Yes, across from the Buc-ee's, yeah.
No. They need to
I've also been
that.
To an In-N-Out Burger, which is a California
yes.
chain.
Yes.
And,
and
let me tell you, their name is...
I like In-N-Out Burger, but that's...
Their name is absolutely accurate if you look at it from your gastrointestinal...
You are not lying, dude. That shit runs through you slicker than goose through... Or fucking shit through a goose. No. No. When it comes to Whataburger, yeah, pass. Or not Whataburger, fucking In-N-Out Burger. Yeah, no.
I've had Whataburger like once, and it was in Texas, but I don't
that's because yeah. that's where it's based.
Yeah, I liked the Whataburger. That I mean that was
Whataburger
back in
wasn't
the day.
Terrible. Like if we decide to really hate ourselves, I'll bring you to Turkey Creek, or I'll bring you. Well, no, bringing you Whataburger home because it's like an hour. No, that wouldn't.
Yeah,
work.
well, this is one of those things.
It's a.
I've
no.
also been to a Tim Hortons, so I mean.
Yeah, well, so have I.
Oh my God, what is it with you fucking left coasters and Tim Hortons? Not a lie, we found the beans in our local grocery and phone boy
ground copy.
Some.
No, I like
ground.
Actually, okay. Yeah, I like Tim Hortons. I mean, this is one of those things.
I can literally tell you. There was a Tim Hortons back in like two towns
okay.
away from where I lived in Connecticut.
Yeah, they're kind of on the East Coast. But
as long as we're talking, you know, local things that don't go anywhere, has anybody here ever had a Burgerville?
Where? No, where's Burgerville?
So Burgerville has, well, at least, you know, when I lived nearby and had it regularly, which I shouldn't have because it probably contributed to my waistline. It was a local franchise with stores all the way from Salem, Oregon, all the way up to Longview, Washington.
Well, Longview, Washington is
south of here.
Yeah, very south of
so
where
basically,
you are.
So basically yeah, Portland, give
to,
or
like,
take
Long
40
Beach
miles.
In Washington, which is, you know,
no, Burgerville is Portland, give or take 40 miles. And back in the day, they had burgers to die from. And I don't know what the hell happened, but, you know, I grew up in Vancouver, Washington, so they were there. And if you wanted, you know, back in the day when fast food didn't cost, you know, more than a sit-down table restaurant, I don't know what the hell happened, I guess COVID. Back then, for relatively cheap, and this was before I gave a shit about whether I was putting healthy shit in my face, you could get a really good burger and shake for... you know, $2.50 for a filling meal with a shake that was made from, you know, real milk, which if you're lactose intolerant can be a problem, but that's a problem for later.
Real ice cream too.
Yeah. Real ice cream. It was a quality food and I loved it. And we had, when I was growing up, you know, all through high school, you know, the local hangout was the Burgerville. And a couple of years ago, Bemlett and I went back to Vancouver and we went down on a disc golfing trip. And just for shits and giggles, we stopped at a Burgerville. I don't know what the hell happened, but their stuff was made from canola oil and cardboard. It was terrible. And I don't know if my tastes changed, but I think that theirs did.
That's ew. Canola oil and cardboard. I think that needs to be a show title. Like, seriously.
Yeah, but that's for the other. That'd be for the other show.
Yeah, but still, I mean, it needs to go on the list. That's a solid one. I actually have, because your esteemed dame is constantly sending me dick pics.
Oh, of course.
So talk to me about dicks.
I as I look over and she's tapping on her phone at this moment.
Nice.
Apparently, you're sending Phoenix dick pics.
I like this.
Yeah, we're talking. Yeah.
She's not denying it.
No, she's not. Yes. Yes, we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't
the
know, but.
Yeah,
you know.
Talking about dicks in, you know, yeah, in that part of the world. Yeah.
No, but seriously, she sent me a satchel of dicks the other night or the other day.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued by this bag of dicks that she sent.
You can
me.
Go down there and you can eat a bag of dicks.
This is awesome. Like, what do you get in that bag of dicks?
So, Dick's Drive-In, they started in Seattle and now they have like 10 locations. The northernmost one is in Everett, you know, a few miles south of here.
I think it's in like Federal Way or something.
Yeah. It's very Seattle local and surrounding area.
But I would imagine it's worth it since y'all are like engaging in it.
Okay. So they are an old style walk-up drive-in.
Oh, that's epic.
You don't actually drive your car up to it, but, you know, you park your car in the parking lot and then you walk up to the window And it's none of this, you know, modern fast food for the last 30 years has always been, okay, I'd like a, you know, I'd like a double whammy.
Say, double cheeseburger, yeah, onion with rings, no pickles and a large and orange drink. Yeah,
yeah. No. What you say is, I want a burger. You can have variants on the burger. You can get the burger, or you can get the burger with cheese. They all come with mayo and pickles and relish and, you know, whatever they have with.
Okay, I have to ask a question. And Homeboy is a horrible person.
They have straight up beef tallow fries. They have real ice cream milkshakes, and all of it is made on a big ass conveyor belt in the back. They just have racks and racks of these things. And the two things that, you know, you can get, you know, first of all, it's not that cheap anymore, but it's still cheaper than a lot of other fast food. But you walk up there and you'd be like, I would like a burger, fries, and a vanilla shake. And the person reaches back, and within 15 seconds, you have a burger, fries, and vanilla shake. It takes longer to pay for this than it does to get your food.
And it's
that fresh. Is the old drive-in experience.
And it's like hot and fresh.
And yeah, I mean, they've got it rolling out. You can see literally a conveyor belt in the back where they, you know, the fries, you can see the chute where little boxes of fries are coming, sliding in, and the person, you know, wrapping the burgers and throwing them into the pile or wherever. I mean, they've got a serious assembly line here.
Washington and have some dicks.
It is not the most quality food out there.
No,
but it is,
I mean,
fast, it is relatively cheap, and it is absolutely a throwback to the old drive-ins where, you know, you just have people walking up in the line. Yeah, there's a line that's eight people deep, but that means that you're going to have a minute and a half wait.
Yeah, a whole minute and a half. We have
That is the Dick's experience. We go there because I like the real ice cream shakes, and she likes the tallow fries, both of which are quality.
I would say the tallow fries would be the fucking bomb. I made some tallow fries for my mom when she lived here because I had a bunch of beef fat that I rendered down. That is truly an experience if you've never had a fry, you know, fried in tallow. Like, fuck yeah. They're good as shit.
And of course, there's, you know, no carbs or grains in all those potatoes.
No, not at all.
Well, no, but at least it's not seed oil.
No, to be serious, though, I would much rather take a potato, slice that bitch up and fry it in beef tallow, because as much as the potato is a starch, you know that oil isn't going to make your joints hurt for 3 days.
Well, that too, yeah, for sure.
But thinking about it, and I know it's commercial.
And don't get me wrong, the real ice cream shakes do make me shit for 3 hours.
Well,
that's because you're lactose intolerant. Yeah. Have you thought possibly?
And you know,
but
the thing is,
dairy.
If the shake is good enough, I don't care.
Yeah, the pain is worth the experience.
Yeah, because of course, yeah, like McDonald's does softs. Oh God, it's just a
no. That's dude, not a what, shake. That
yeah, I was gonna say when you enter the word McDonald's, you've lost the argument.
Yeah, or Dairy Queen because I used to consume.
If you want an actual hand scooped shake, that's fast food. Yeah. Hardee's, only place you're getting it.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, here's my judge as far as shakes.
Carl's Jr. for those on the left coast.
As far as I'm concerned, with a shake. If you put a straw in the shake, then it's not, that's not what I'm looking for.
Oh, you want to spoon this thing out.
It needs a spoon.
I got you.
Yeah.
There's a place in Loudoun that's called Carl's. Funny enough, you know, Phone Boy said Carl's Jr., but.
No, actually, it's his dad.
There's a place in Loudoun that's like that. It's a drive-in, and they bring you the burger in this, like, cardboard little tray thing. The french fries are under the burger.
Yeah.
It's quality slop for not a lot of money. It'll make a turd. It'll fill your belly. It's a fucking institution.
Yeah.
It is.
The burger container should be made out of cardboard, not the burger.
Yeah,
well, this is true.
I assure
it,
you,
it should be greasy AF.
Here's the thing.
Yeah, yeah, putting the burger in the cardboard game, should make the cardboard greasy.
If the Sir and Dame Bemrose come to visit us here in the great state of Tennessee, because you're the only Tennessee baby, ah-cha-cha-cha, I will actually try. I know that was so shitty. I will actually make the drive. We'll make the drive to Carl's. It's worth it. I love their chili dogs. They're like a foot long of, you're going to fart all night, but it's going to taste good with a little mustard, a little onion. You know what I'm saying? Their burgers are good. It reminds me of what you described Dick's as. Now, I can't say that their fries are done in tallow, sadly, but all in all, it's a quality meal that will fill your tummy and it won't break your bank. So, yeah, anyone local to Tennessee, Loudoun, Tennessee, go check out Carl's. They're an institution. They've been there better than 60 years, from what I understand. And they used to do barbecue back in the day, but they switched over to doing...
I was just reminded of the biggest problem that I have with choosing what I want to eat at Dick's is, in general, when I order a burger, a fast food burger, I will order it without pickle. I just don't like eating pickles on burgers. It's just a personal thing.
I want to
there is no ordering a Dick's burger without pickle. You don't want pickle on your Dick's burger. What you do is you order a burger and then you open it up, you pull the pickles off, and then you throw them to the seagulls who are completely surrounding the building because they know free food when they see it.
See, I don't understand, and we'll probably have a playful banter about this. I do not understand putting mayonnaise on a burger, but I love a pickle. I'm just saying.
Yeah, we've heard that. But that's the after-after party.
That is the after-after party. But seriously, like Foam Boy does this. We had hot dogs for dinner, just a quick little...
You see, during the after-after party, the mayonnaise comes out of the pickle if you're good enough.
Dear God. But seriously, Rye, what's up with putting mayonnaise on a burger? Is it a left coast thing because Foam Boy does this? And I just look at him like, do you need therapy? Do you need a... fucking jacket that ties it.
Okay,
See, Mama says it too.
Okay,
thank you, Mama. Okay, mayo on the burger.
Okay,
I don't know what it is.
I guess I like mayo, but
I got a question though. You know what? As long as we're gatekeeping food, do you put the red mayonnaise sugar, or I mean the red vinegar sugar on your burger?
No. I'll be honest with you. What I really enjoy, and this might
you know
make
what
you
I'm
cringe.
I'm okay with mayonnaise. I'm not against mayonnaise. I can handle mayonnaise.
I'm a mustard.
I can't
girl.
Handle. Oh, I okay. You know what? If you do like a good stone ground or Dijon, then we don't have a disagreement.
Yeah, but I can't mustard.
I can't handle ketchup. There's no form of ketchup that doesn't taste like just sugar.
Here's the thing: since I and Foam Boy cut out sugar in our lives. Ketchup has an ass load of sugar, and the stuff that doesn't have sugar in it, it really just doesn't have the kind of appeal that a regular
ketchup. It doesn't
ketchup
have ketchup
would.
In it.
Yeah. It I mean, truly, it doesn't have sugar, so it doesn't have the normal ketchup flavor. But I have always been a fan of mustard. I am the weirdo who, when the group of us would go to the local pizzeria and order like fries or some shit, I would be the one dunking them in mustard while everybody else is ketchuping. Or... Okay. One thing I found when I worked at a fry place in the mall, and this might make you kind of cringe a little, but if it doesn't, then you're one of us, a little bit of cider vinegar on a,
okay.
on
I'm,
a ketchup.
I'm just going to gross fry. Everybody out with my last comment, because we're at a risk of turning this tech podcast into a podcast about fast food for the last 15 minutes. I don't think we've actually finished the podcast. We didn't do the outro.
I have one more story.
There may be editing to remove the fast food segment.
When we're done fapping about dicks and food.
But I will just gross everybody out and say, you know, you can have all of your conventional condiments, your mayo, mustard, ketchup, whatever. Blue cheese. That's all I have to say. Screw you all.
On a French fry? No.
On everything. Mostly on a burger.
No.
You're not going to get hatred here because that's a black and blue burger, man.
Yes, exactly.
But I will dip my fries in blue cheese dressing. That's fucking awesome.
Dude, yeah. That's Nanette. Fuck that. I've got to make some blue cheese dressing for an upcoming wedge salad. Yeah. I'm totally going to get some fucking potatoes and make real French fries because I can render down some beef tallow. I need to do that.
Actually, we have some beef tallow in the fridge.
I'm saying. I can render down that beef tallow and grab like a potato or two, make some fries, and dip them in the homemade blue cheese.
I think we have some beef tallow in the freezer here. It just happens to be inside a beef right now.
Well, there is
a problem with it. Don't you, hold on, seriously though, don't you and the dame get like a quarter cow or some shit from your farmer?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what's in the freezer.
Ask them the next time you get your quarter cow, ask them to give you some fat and just render it down.
Oh, that's how I get my pork lard most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, not our processor, although we're switching processors.
In fact, she loves when I get the leaf lard, the stuff that still has membranes and stuff in it.
I know what that is. They sell that at the farmer's market.
Yeah, that's what I get. I get that at the farm. I'll get a big blob of leaf lard at the farmer's market. And while it's still mostly frozen, I get a sharp knife and I dice it. And I get little tiny half centimeter cubes that I throw in the frying pan, render those, because I get a ton of lard that I rendered. And she gets her cracklings.
We literally have between 3 and 4 containers of pork fat right now, lard, whatever, that we have stuck in the mini fridge because we use so much bacon fat. That is one of our favorite fats to use when we cook because it adds the flavor and it doesn't add that joint destroying shit that the Hateful Eight does. But I'm serious. Like, I'm muted. And I told Phoneboy, I'm like, oh my God, we need to contact one of our chicken people who does leaf lard and see if we can't get some of that and make a batch of fries out of it. That would be so worth it. I love that.
It would be. Okay. So, yeah. Next on Lotus cooking tips on 2.5 bents.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
right?
Yeah. So I've got one more story, and I think it's actually
okay,
kind of funny.
Hold on. Time code. We cut to here.
Yeah. I don't know. We're already at like almost 2 hours. We're actually a little over 2 hours. Okay, so
yeah, you fucking know you love it, Quit Bitching.
Yeah. So we've got one more story for you. So the original Mac calculator design came from letting Steve Jobs play with menus for 10 minutes. So in February of 1982, Apple employee number 8, Chris Espinoza, faced a problem that would feel familiar to anyone who has ever had a micromanaging boss. Steve Jobs wouldn't stop critiquing his calculator design for the Mac. After days of revision cycles, the 21-year-old programmer found an elegant solution. He built what he called the Steve Jobs Roll Your Own Calculator Construction Set and let Jobs design it himself. And that design lasted for almost 20 years. I mean, we're going back to the, like the, you know, Mac OS calculator from 1984, which, you know, I've used myself. I mean, I used that a 128K stack Mac back in the day.
I'm going to rephrase your headline. Mac designers only spent 10 minutes on their design.
Yeah, fair enough. I like that, but like I said, it was kind of a nice little, you know, story to kind of end with, you know. And I mean, the story kind of goes into the, you know, it's an Ars Technica story, and it kind of, the guy talks about the fact that
it's got pictures and
It's got pictures and you know, and it's, and like
human interest bits. Yeah, I know
it's an Ars Technica story, so you kind of know what's in it. But yeah, I mean, this idea that you have to create a, you know. You know, I don't know, calculator construction set. You remember the pinball construction set back in the day?
Yeah, yes, I played with some of those.
Yeah, so have I. I mean, I've designed a couple of machines myself back in the day. I mean, yeah, I'm a big pinball fan, but
these days it's called Havoc, the physics engine.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I mean, like I said, I could have done more out of this story, but I like this fact that basically the original calculator in Mac OS was designed by Steve Jobs, twiddling menus, things like, you know, line width and fonts and blah, blah, bark, bark, woof, woof.
I'm honestly not surprised. And the idea of putting together prototypes for, you know, for program manager or whatever. I mean, this sounds more like, I imagine, more in depth of, you know, the idea of menu is like, okay, we're talking a design tool at this point, but yeah, if you've got a boss like Steve Jobs who will not let you go until you get it perfect for what he wants, to be like, okay, fine, show me what you want, I'll do that and not deviate. Yeah, this is an engineer who found a way to save time.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, I can't hate the idea, right? It's like, yeah, let me design something that lets you design the look and feel the way you want. We'll make it work the way you want it. I mean, I don't see anything really wrong with this idea. I think it's actually kind of clever, right? That somebody said, hey, let me create something that, because I'm having arguments over look and feel. It's like, here, yeah, you twiddle the knobs, you make it look the way you fucking want. I'll make it, you know, I'll make it functional and do all the bullshit, right? Or have other.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The very idea that you have, I would never have wanted to work for him. For the simple fact that there are so many design decisions that will not matter to any human being on Earth except for the one making those decisions. And that is a massive time waster and source of workplace stress. And I would absolutely hate working there. And I don't think there's a single user out there who's like, boy, I'm sure glad that, you know, they went through that extra round of design and went with the 43 degree rounded corners instead of the 41 degree rounded corner. You know, nobody cares. And the very fact that he was that exacting and, you know, had to go through that many, like the fact that he was the boss was a problem to work around. And I find it to be an innovative solution to work around, but this doesn't make me respect Steve Jobs anymore.
Well, no, I just thought it was an interesting anecdote. I mean, I didn't.
Yeah, and I thought I wanted to, you know, this is a show where we rant, so I'd turn it into a rant anyway.
Well, of course. I mean,
because he doesn't want to do ATN, he figures he'll just save his rants for 2.5 bends.
Is it working?
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, my sir, swell.
Hey, it makes it for us. And so, you know, we actually, I mean, you know, of course, we also appreciate all of y'all listening, right? I mean, not that I'm like making
you say that as if anybody's listening this deep in the show.
Well, I mean, you
they all went off to go get some fast food.
They did. They decided after my rant about DoorDash that they wouldn't be lazy fat fucks and they'd go get their own fast food.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. I think, are we done? I think we've all kind of talked about it.
How do you usually end these things?
All right, so I think there's only one thing to say.
It's game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?